This is the Chochmat Nashim podcast on JewishCoffeeHouse.com, because Judaism is better when women are heard. Now, here are Rachel Stomel, Ann Gordon, and Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
Hello, and welcome to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today
with Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
Rachel Stomel is off today. In 1802, one of America's founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, wrote a letter to the Danbury Baptist Association explaining that the Bill of Rights from the Constitution of the United States prevents the establishment of a national church. Point being, the Baptists had no reason to fear religious discrimination. After all, many of the first English immigrants to what became the United States had fled England to avoid religious discrimination themselves. That doesn't mean there was no religion in the European settlement of the so-called New World. People were very religious, as Thomas Jefferson's statement makes clear. Quote, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." Lo and behold, that First Amendment statement about making no law does not include the famous phrase, "That's straight out of Jefferson's letter." In Israel, of course, we speak of separation between religion and state. And as you've surely heard us say before, there is none, or not really, not in the way that the U.S. purports to separate religion and state. Also not in the way that 26-some-odd countries listed by Wikipedia in the, quote, "separation between church and state" article purport some kind of separation. Israel does not make the list. Not saying that Wikipedia is necessarily the most accurate source, but I wouldn't have known that a predominantly Catholic country like Brazil separates between religion and state. Israel, for the most part, supports religious freedom. If you're Catholic, you're free to practice Catholicism, Muslim, Islam, Jewish, obviously Judaism. But there's no separation from the state, which means that life cycle events that have legal ramifications, say marriage or death, God forbid, are largely governed by the state branches of religious authority. This, as you have heard from us before, is a good recipe for a big fat mess for serious law-abiding citizens, no matter how religious they are. Today, we are talking with Rabbi Dr. Seth Farber, founder of E-Team, an organization that was designed to usher Jews through the maze of the Israel rabbinate and navigate the oodles of religious bureaucracy. E-Team has become so much more, though. Seth, welcome. Thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you very much.
Many of you will know what E-Team does, and many will not. So I can just say that for me, when I started on my journey in the mess that is religion and state in Israel, Rabbi Seth Farber was one of the first people I was directed to and one of the first people to try and help me and direct me to other people to try and help me in the things that I was dealing with. So could you just do our audience a favor and tell us a little bit about E-Team, how it started and what you've been doing?
Sure. So first of all, it's really nice to be here and be part of Chochmat Nashim in this way. E-Team was founded by myself in 2002. At the time, we founded E-Team to enable people to live Jewish lives in Israel, which seems like a pretty commonplace thing. It's a pretty obvious thing, but it seemed at the time and still today, it's not so obvious that people can live Jewish lives. People who want to live Jewish lives can live Jewish lives in Israel. And at the time, we founded an organization that was meant to help people navigate the system. Israel's legal system allows the rabbinate, the chief rabbinate, which is ultra-Orthodox, to control marriage and divorce, to a certain extent conversion, to a large extent burial. And people simply don't have the tools to navigate that system. And at the time, we just created a system of tools that still stands as one of our core businesses to enable people to live Jewish lives. Over the last 16 years or so, E-Team has morphed. We've pivoted twice. For a long time, we were involved in education. But today, our vision statement is to make Israel a place that's respectful and responsive to the Jewish needs of the Jewish people. What that means is we're not only about enabling people to live Jewish lives, but we're about creating systemic change. And that's reflected in some of the big projects that go on here. We have 26 people now working here full time at E-Team. And we still have an assistance center, which helps more than 5,000 people a year navigate the religious establishment in Israel. That means if someone can't get married or can't get buried or doesn't know how to get divorced or wants to get married in Israel and does not approve they're Jewish, we can help walk them through that process and sometimes even literally walk them through the rabbinate or take them down to the rabbinate. We have a pretty wide cadre of volunteers that helps people do that. The second project we have is a legal and Policy Center, and that really works on the systemic change. And we've had some very, very successful litigations against the government and even against the chief rabbinate in 6 or 7 times, where we've changed the way through litigation or sometimes through legislation and sometimes just through compliance work and regulation, changed the way that Israel functions. So we've changed the way burial works in Israel, and we've changed the way mikvah works in Israel. We've played an important role in that. We've changed the way a marriage works in Israel to some extent. We've changed the way conversion works in Israel. And on the last issue, the conversion issue, we haven't changed it enough, especially given the enormous challenges that face the Jewish people, but particularly the population in Israel. Israel now has a Jewish population of about 8 million, but about 400,000 of the 8 million are Jewish, but they aren't recognized as Jewish by the rabbinate. In fact, many of them are not written down as Jewish in the population registry, but their identities are completely Jewish. Almost all of them are immigrants from the former Soviet Union. The government has tried to work with this population to enable some sort of conversion, and the government has abjectly failed. So Itim, together with a number of other partners, 3 years ago, began a third project, which is a rabbinical court for conversion. And today we're converting something like 18 or 19% of all the Orthodox conversions in Israel. That's called Giur Kalacha. So that's a project today of Itim. So if I had to conceptualize, just to sum up where we are from 2002 till today, today we have one division that basically works with the existing religious establishment. That's the Assistant Center. We have one that's trying to change it through systemic change. That's the Policy and Legal Center. And we have one that's competing with it, and that's the rabbinical court, the Giur Kalacha rabbinical court, where we have something like 70 religious Zionist rabbis who have come out in support of the Giur Kalacha yet so far.
I have a million questions that I want to ask you about everything you just said. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have to narrow it down. So basically, here's the big question. The rabbanut, leave it up, fix it, take it down.
So the question is not a binary question. You ask it as a binary question. Are we better off with connection religious and state, or are we better off with it just falling apart, the American model, if you will? And I think that binary question isn't the right question to be asked. It's a very simple question, but it's not the right question to be asked. If you had to ask me today, would we be better off with it or without it? So I have some pretty strong thoughts about that. But I don't think that the American model, the United States model, is a particularly good model for the state of Israel. It doesn't speak to the needs of the majority of Israel's Jewish population.
Anywhere there's no religion, there's no official religion in any way.
Right. In other words, here I think the Jewish state needs to have an official religion. That's Judaism. At the same time, as you were talking about your introduction and Thomas Jefferson, I opened up the Declaration of Independence, which promises freedom of religion in Israel. And I believe in that. But I don't believe, I'll try to say it, even though it's sloganism to a certain extent, but I'll say it anyway, which I don't think we prayed for 2,000 years for a Jewish state to have separation of church and state in this country. I love the idea that the state takes an active role in the Jewish lives of its citizens. I like the idea that mikvahs don't have to be paid for, you know, they're paid for by government money, they don't have to be paid for by private fundraising. I like the fact that Jewish marriage is a recognized form of marriage in Israel. I think that's awesome. The problem is that something's gone dramatically wrong with the way Judaism is being implemented in this country. In other words, the theory is there, just the practice isn't there. And that's what really has to change, in my opinion. And that's what we're trying to do. So
you want to expand what it means to have a Jewish state.
I want to expand far beyond what it means today, right? What people think.
What the Jewishness of
the Jewish state. Exactly. And I think, by the way, Israel's 70 years, I say all the time, Israel, people have been celebrating this year, the fact that Israel is 70 years old, but Israel's really 70 years young.
Right.
And because of that, it has tremendous opportunities to figure out what it means to be a Jewish state. In other words, we haven't had this opportunity in 2,000 years, literally 2,000 years. And now for the first time, we're grappling with issues. I actually thought the security situation would be solved before we got to these issues, but I see that's not going to happen, right, you know, in the next week
nice.
Or two. Right. But in the meantime, for a variety of reasons, and maybe also because the Israel diaspora rift and for all sorts of other reasons, but I think people are beginning to grapple with this issue. What does it mean to be a Jewish state, and what does that mean for the practice of Judaism in this state? So yes, it's not only about expansion, it's about a fundamental change in the way Judaism works in this country. This country needs to respond to the Jewish needs of the Jewish people. And the Rabbanut, the religious establishment today, has a very myopic view. It's very narrow in terms of the way they understand Jewish people. When the religious minister comes along and says, oh, Reform Jews, they're the equivalent of dogs, or they have bar mitzvahs for their dogs, it's not just highlighting some sort of ridiculous misunderstanding or cynicism. It actually relates to the fact that there's two different ideologies at play here about what Judaism should be. One sees Judaism as a completely insular, you know, and that's their ideology. That's the Rabbanut's ideology. They really believe it. The best way to protect the future of Judaism
is to keep narrow definitions.
Narrow definitions, put up as many walls as possible. We're willing to pay the price of, you know, eliminating people from the Jewish people. They won't be part of it anyway. And then there's another...
It's ironic, by the way, that they say that in America there's a tremendous assimilation that's losing Jews, but at the same time, and no one really speaks about this, at the same time, the more they narrow these definitions and the more they leave more people out of the box, well, we're doing the same thing.
Right.
We're
no,
also narrowing...
You're completely kicking them out of the Jewish religion. What I argue about the Russians is we spent, as North American Jews... We spent a good 20 years trying to free Soviet Jewry.
Yes. Right.
Right, just to bring him in, just so the Rabbanut could come along and give him a slap in the face and say, we don't want you here. And by the way, it's not even something I laugh about anymore because the chief rabbi, the present chief rabbi, David Lau, is on the record saying that the law of return was a big mistake because really we should have only had the halachic definition of Judaism and then we wouldn't have to deal with any of these people.
That's really disturbing. I did not know that.
It's incredibly disturbing. I'll say it in the most stark political terminology I can, being aware that we're in the public sphere here. Israel has worked very hard, Jewish Israel, and the government has worked very hard to maintain a fine balance population-wise between Jewish citizens of this country and non-Jewish citizens of this country. Had Rabbi Lau's vision been true, you know, realized, right, then the 75 to 80% Jewish people in this country would go down to something like 65 to 68% Jews in this country. Now think about what that means demographically. Think about what it means politically. Think about what it means about the Jewish future of the state of Israel.
But so, also in terms of like saving Jewish lives, the Hitler definition became the definition of the law of return for good reason, because all of those people who Hitler defined as Jews ended up...
Right.
Meaning
they
like...
They went through the fire of Judaism, as Arthur Herzberg once said. And
which is
now we're making
to
them through
should...
to go through the water of Judaism. But what I would argue is that we have a great moral responsibility, as well as a religious and Jewish responsibility towards, especially people who immigrated, but also people who self-identify as Jews. I'm not talking about that 10% or 9% in the Pew study who in North America who have no connection to Jewish ancestry, but there's a good 50 or 60% of the Jewish population today in the world who might not pass the muster of the Rabbanut, but we have a great responsibility to them. By the way, the state of Israel is already demonstrating its responsibility to them. Kids who come on birthright.
Right.
We don't question, are their mothers Jewish?
Right, they don't have to pass a test to get onto birth.
They don't have to, their rabbis don't have to be on some sort of white list in order to be able to make it here. So Israel is actually showing that on one hand, it wants to be open to the broad swath of the Jewish people. And at the same time, the Rabbanut doesn't understand that so much. So we're engaged in an epic battle, really an epic battle about the future of the Medinat Yisrael and the future of the Jewish people.
So one thing that I find amazing about living here, right, is even as we struggle and even as this really kills us, we are part of this, as you say, this epic fight for the future of Judaism, the future of the Jewish state, for the future of the Jewish people, which includes not only Jews that live here, but the Jews in the diaspora as well, because at the end of the day, this is the only Jewish state. We don't even get to have one, you know, according to most people in the world, whether it's legitimate or not, we're certainly not going to have another. So we need to get this right. So you didn't really come out and say, what does that mean? Like when you say, so I do want it to be Jewish, but I don't want it to be only ultra-Orthodox, what does that mean? We put different men and women into the Rabbanut, what does it look like, ideally?
Putting men and women into the Rabbanut is a tool. We have to have a vision first.
Okay,
so I think we have a very good vision statement. Israel has to be, I will be happy to close Etim the day Israel is respectful and responsive to the Jewish needs of the Jewish people. Certainly women playing more important roles in the religious establishment is a sine qua non for me, and Etim has fought that, right? We recently won a court battle over the last 3 or 4 years, together with the Rackman Center, together with a lot of other women's groups, to have a woman installed in a significant position within the rabbinical courts. The first woman is today serving as legal guide in the rabbinical courts in at least one of them, and there'll be more coming. And again, that might sound like a technical thing, especially to a North American audience, but it's incredibly significant. Nothing can happen in the rabbinical court without, where this woman is serving at least, without her having a say in what happens. No decision, rabbinical court decision of any meaning can actually come out of the rabbinical court without that.
And rabbinical court decisions, just for those who don't know, this is all the divorces.
All the divorces, all the proving Jewishness, a lot of the inheritance cases in this country, they all go through the rabbinical courts. So for the first time, a woman, just because we fought in court to have a woman. We said it's discriminatory.
In secular court.
Yes, we fought it. We actually fought in the Supreme Court, right, in the Supreme Civil Court, in order to make sure that a woman could have that position. But coming back to the central point, that's a given. But there are many, many tools that are going to have to be implemented for the religious establishment in Israel, for the Israeli government, more accurately, to make this country respectful and responsive to the Jewish needs of the Jewish people. So it can manifest itself. When you ask me for a direct recipe, I can't tell you if it doesn't mean 6 women in the rabbinical court instead of 3. In other words, those are all details.
Right
now, we need to build broad-based support for the vision, that people understand there's something incredibly wrong. Now, I think a lot of people are angry, especially in North America, about what's going on in the religious establishment. Some people are happy about it. Some people think, yes, that's the correct way to have Judaism, and I understand them. I do. I think they're not aware enough of the price we're paying, both in Israel and around the world. I think we're distancing people more and more from the state of Israel and from their own Jewish lives because they feel the state of Israel is not adequately responsive or significantly responsive to them. So we need to build a sense, not just of anger, but a sense of building together. In this sense, Israeli Jews and diaspora Jews have a shared project. This is not something that is just up to Israeli Jews. This is something that Israelis and Jews from the diaspora who care about the future of Israel should be working on together to determine how do we want the Jewish people to look in another 100 years or even another 50 years? And there isn't enough critical thinking about that. There's a lot of thinking about security. There's a lot of thinking about poverty. There isn't so much thinking about what does it mean to be Jewish and to have a Jewish state.
Let me ask on that. I think that for me, this vision that you're describing is kind of glorious and perhaps utopian. My question is, what happens when halacha and these broader parameters come into potential conflict? Let's say all those birthright kids decide they're going to make aliyah. Some of them are not halachically Jewish, but now they're going to become citizens of the state, let's say, and they're going to marry within the state because the newfangled rabbanut that is going to be established in this vision is going to accept them wholeheartedly. So do we care? Do we say halacha doesn't matter about who's Jewish when we marry? Or let's say the girls in particular, the young women of this imaginary birthright core that's going to make aliyah and marry and have children in Israel who are not halachically Jewish?
So this is a great question. And I think there are halachic solutions. The halacha that I believe in as an Orthodox rabbi is a halacha that responds to the needs of the hour. It's not a halacha that freezes itself in the 16th or 18th or 12th century. Quite the opposite. In other words, a halacha that does that doesn't manifest what I perceive to be God's vision for the Jewish people on this planet, nor what, you know, the metaphysical notion of what God instructed us to do. So how does halacha respond? I'll give you an example. The way we're dealing today with immigrants from the former Soviet Union, when immigrants come, we can either try to convert them very quickly with a full notion that they're not going to ever be observant. I think that clashes with mainstream halacha. But there's another way to do things, which is to say we have a way of incorporating, and again, on the conversion issue, which I think people have struggled with for generations, I think there's a simple solution. In Israel today, we can take children who are under bar and bat mitzvah, and we can convert them without having them accept the commandments upon themselves. They don't have to be observant. It's very simple. Is that a dominant position in the halacha? Yes. Is it an accepted position in the halacha? Yes. Is it a practiced position in the halacha in the state of Israel today? Not by the rabbanut. That shows that the rabbanut, when it has no halachic alternative, isn't using it.
So when you say
the birthright kids come, we embrace them. Not just the birthright kids. This is exactly what the issue we have with the immigrants.
Oh, I know.
We embrace them.
Example.
They're part of the community. They serve in the army. They have full responsibilities. They have full rights. And what we say to them is, if you want, you don't have to, but we respect you enough, and because we were trying to maintain the integrity of the Jewish people and its oneness, if you will, or singularity, so we will provide an opportunity for you a few days after you give birth in the hospital to simply immerse your child in the mikvah, and with that, your child will be Jewish and be able to be married in the rabbanut and be able to be part of this new fangled religious establishment.
And there's no need to convert after bar bat mitzvah?
Once a child converts before bar bat mitzvah, they're completely Jewish. They're completely Jewish. Unless they get up and deny it. Unless they get up at bar mitzvah and say, hey, we're not interested in being Jewish. Then they're Jewish.
Interesting.
They're fully part of the community. And that is a simple solution. It's a simple solution for this, again, enormous challenge. It was the challenge of our generation. If the halakha cannot respond to the challenge of our generation, then we're going to be living in an era, just to be very clear, where millions of Jews will be written out of the Jewish people. When the Rabbanut comes along and puts together lists and says, these are the only rabbis we're going to accept, they are fundamentally writing millions of Jews out of the Jewish people. Now, usually that's not done by Jews. It's done by our enemies, right? It's done by anti-Semites. So that is something we can't allow to happen. And that's something that Itim, we spend our days and nights fighting that so that it won't happen.
So to wrap up for our audience, what can we, the Jewish people, do to assist Itim, to assist others who are working with you to do exactly what you're saying, which is to make a Judaism for a Jewish state for Jewish people and a Judaism everyone can live with? What right. can the average person do?
So first of all, the average person needs to be educated better. You shouldn't take, especially if you live in North America, you shouldn't take the Rabbanut or the religious establishment in Israel as something that is good just because it's there. It's not necessarily good, and it's not necessarily going to be there for always. On the other hand, it's important to understand there's a lot of nuance here. I think one of the big challenges for me is not just, I think in the last decade, a lot of people have gotten a bad feeling about the Rabbanut, but they don't know that there's an alternative possible, and they assume that we just have to throw everything out. It's not like that at all. First of all, you have to get educated. The websites of not just Itim, but the organizations that are involved in this space, they're incredibly important educational tools. Secondly, when you come here, go visit these places, right? Itim is open. Our offices are open every day. People from overseas come, and they visit, and they want to see what's happening here. And it's not just Itim. In all the organizations, visit, understand. There's ways to get involved as volunteers from here, from abroad, in all these organizations. Most importantly, when you meet decision makers, people who are in the government, don't let them get away with just saying, hey, it's good. When people come from Israel and they talk in your synagogues or in your institutions, in your JCCs, in your federations, all those people should be told, we care about the Jewish future of the state of Israel and tell us what you're doing about it. And I think those are all practical steps that people can take. Of course, there's also the issue of supporting these institutions, and that is not something I take for granted. It's not something that you should take lightly. And again, across the board, the institutions should be supported financially, but it's not only about financial support. It's also about getting involved, and there's ways to get involved in each of the organizations. And I hope the listeners will take me seriously and explore more.
Let us know what you think. Have you had a run-in with a Rabbanut? Write it in the comments. You can find us on our Facebook page, Chochmat Nashim, C-H-O-C-H-M-A-T-N-A-S-H-I-M.
Can you hear us now?